Greetings. It is April 11th, and Stephanie's here with me. Hey, Stephanie.
Hey there.
And we're really excited today because we have on Scott Dworkin of the Democratic Coalition. And so we're gonna get to him in just a second. But first, I just want to see how you're doing, Stephanie. What's going on?
Oh, my God. I can barely sit still today. It's like this is all coming to a head.
Oh, my God.
Although, you know, we've been waiting for this moment. I am more excited than I've been in the last year and a half today. I can't even imagine what's on deck.
Oh my God. I know it's going to be an interesting show. It's really going to be interesting. So before we get started, let me just get some business out of the way. You can become a show subscriber by, basically just going to patreon.com/startmeup. And, whether you want to subscribe for $1 a month, that gets you all the free shows. If you do $5 a month, you get into And Another Thing with Steph and me, which is what we do after every show. And it's just kind of fun stuff, personal stuff. We get kind of crazy on that one. So you can support the show for any amount of money that you can find in your pockets. We would appreciate it. And then also just, I don't usually do this, but I am an author and I have some books on Amazon. I have Peyton's Choice, which is a book about teen abortion, and it is pro-choice. And also The Virgin Diaries, which is where 72 men and women describe their first-time sexual experiences. And then American Woman, The Pole Dance, Women in Voting. And that's basically just my my take on women's issues. And I, of course, talk about the importance of voting. And they're all on Amazon. So that's all out of the way now. Now.
and they're all money well spent.
Yes.
I can attest. And I read that stuff.
Well, thank you. But now we're just going to get to the good stuff. We're going to get to Scott. So we have Scott on the line. Hello, Scott.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
We are so excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here.
Oh my God.
I love that twang. I have to say, you know, I've watched you, Scott, on AM Joy. I follow you on Twitter. I hang on your every word. I put my fist in the air, several times a day when I read your tweets. I never noticed a Southern twang in your voice.
Yeah, that's a dentist. I think is. But I do. I'm from North Carolina. I grew up in Ohio, so I have a mix between the Midwest Ohio accent and then a Southern drawl from North Carolina. So it goes back and
forth. I like it. It's great. It's cool.
You are the founder of the Democratic Coalition, and you were a senior advisor on both Draft Biden and Run Warren campaigns, and then you were also a veteran of both the 2008 and 2012 Obama campaigns. And so you have a lot going on. Obviously, you are a busy guy. And I see your tweets just like Stephanie all day long. And you have some charisma there. A lot of people agree with you and like you. And so we wanted to have you on because we just wanted to chat with you all. You know, I mean, obviously, as Stephanie said, today is a huge day. So, I mean... Do you think that he's going to move, Trump is going to move to fire Rosenstein or Mueller today?
I think he's going to move to fire everybody. I think he's going to go for Sessions. He's going to go for Rosenstein. He's going to go as far down the line until people actually, and I think it will be today. I honestly, I think just based on movement on the Hill here in D.C. and what I've been seeing and what I've been hearing, it seems pretty clear that he's gonna make some moves. Now, whether or not he does it today, that's gonna be solely Trump's call.
Yeah,
he may wait if there's too much of a backlash right now. He may wait for another distraction.
Well, he's talking about Syria now, striking on Syria. Do you think that's gonna go down? What do you think's gonna happen there?
I think he's gonna try and pull out American forces and hand it over to Putin. That's what I think he's actually going to do is he's going to try and make this so it's a gift to Putin.
Jesus.
I know that's not what you wanted to hear. I'm sure. That's not what I want to hear either. You know, I want someone who's going to take a stand and lead the world and not sit on their hands and play golf all day and drink 13 Cokes. Diet Cokes. I don't want to offend them. Diet Cokes. He's slugging it down. So, you know, he goes, it's weird because he loves, you know, there's a lot of reports saying that he is angry and pissed. But the truth is, he goes back and forth. He's enjoying this. That's how sick he is.
Yeah, of course he is. Yeah. Yes.
Well, it's all about him.
Right.
And it is. Right. But I mean, okay, so this Cohen raid. Let me ask you about this. Do you think that, you know, everybody's saying that this should terrify Trump because obviously Cohen is his fixer. He is the guy that has decade or at least a decade of whatever, you know, files, notes, information on Trump that could be potentially very damaging. So do you think that Trump realizes what deep shit he's in? Or let me just put it to you this way. They were talking about last night that in December he was looking to fire Mueller. And this was based on the information from Deutsche Bank, which came out. He wanted to fire Mueller. Then they updated the inference. So I don't have that particular detail of what the information was. But whatever it was, initially it seemed it was a threat to Trump. When the story was updated, it was no longer a threat to Trump. And he let go the idea of, you know, firing Mueller. So, and this was supposedly in December. So now we have the situation where he's raided Cohen's office. I mean, what's your take on this? Do you think that he understands that this could be very damaging to him, or where do you see his head right now?
I think the fact that Mueller was not, is not in charge of that part of the case, is not in charge of that Cohen case, and he handed it off, is something that Trump didn't expect. I think Trump expected Mueller to come in and take control of it, but that's not the kind of guy he is. He knows, it seems like he's playing chess, and then, you know, Trump is playing Connect Four. He's doing something. But I think with in regards to Cohen, it's the most serious raid on a sitting president. I don't know. The only place that would be worse for them to raid, besides, you know, even worse than Trump Organization or Trump's homes, is Michael Cohen's office. Yeah. And the fact that he's his personal attorney, has attorney-client privilege, the fact that they knew that it was going to have a lot of scrutiny from Trump means that it's airtight. Like whatever they were looking for was just extra. I would assume that this is the tip of this iceberg, and Mueller's waiting for it to drop. You know, I would look for indictments of Roger Stone, Donald Trump, Don Jr. And
Babyface Jared,
maybe that's a confusing one because I'm not sure who's going to get him first.
Well, right. Frankly, I mean, we've all been speculating that, you know, indictments coming down are going to be Don Jr. or Babyface, as you call him, Jared of the Corn, as I call him. But I think Michael Cohen is totally better than any of, I mean, as far as like getting excited about indictments, I would much rather see Cohen indicted before any of those players.
Right.
No, I have a question about Cohen directly because the guy seems like a total doofus, you know? I mean, this is like, you know, you say Connect Four, that's exactly what we're dealing with. You know, Michael Avenatti, who, you know, on the other side of things, just one aspect of, you know, this is just the Stormy Daniels side, right? Now we've got Mueller and we've got New York and they're, you know, high power state's attorneys going in and raiding Michael Cohen. And then to go back to Avenatti, he's saying, you know, this guy, Trump has surrounded himself with moronic, low level, low capability attorneys. And so, you know, Michael Cohen also knows where all the bodies are buried, right? And so if we look at, like, I have a part in this, if these attorneys that went in and seized, or the FBI that went in and seized all of this information from Cohen's home, from Cohen's hotel room, from Cohen's office, if they get him to flip, it's curtains, correct?
I would assume so. And you know what? You should have some ownership over this, because if you think about how this all started, it's Americans like us that stood up and said Sessions can't be a part of this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Rosenstein can't be a part of this. And it was because we were so loud to Congress. That's how Mueller came about in the first place. Now, one thing that I want to make clear is that Michael Cohen is still being investigated by Robert Mueller. That is not changing. He's investigating Middle East deals, Kazakhstan, Latvian deals, and
the money laundering.
And in Russia, because there's a couple different things. He was directly in touch with the Kremlin and Russia itself starting in 2006-07. And they did a couple things. One was they had an MMA style fight in New York City with what they call Putin's personal fighter. Like the guy is one of Putin's best friends. Fedor is his name. And around that, they also tried to set up in St. Petersburg a reality show in Russia. So they're trying to build not only television audience there. Cohen also was behind a lot of the trips in regards to bringing Russians over to sell them condos on an individual basis. So if he has all the records, you know, I can't imagine what they found and what they have. But, you know, there's multiple cases against Cohen. So and they're all being investigated, you know, by a lot of people. So at this point now, I think one of the things also that I want to make sure a big thing that the mafia does is they play stupid. They act like they're incompetent. Cohen is smart enough, and we need to give him that credit so that he has the accountability. So I would say that, you know, he's much smarter than he comes off. He's also, you know, he's got, I think he's involved with hundreds of millions of dollars in properties separate from Trump Organization. So you see these guys that are actually not just wealthy, but they're rich, like completely rich, you know.
And
he acts like he's some doofus attorney that's got like $1 million when he's got like hundreds of millions in assets.
Wow.
And they're really good at playing that off. Sort of like, you know, Trump with his Twitter, which I still don't believe that he's ever tweeted, but that's a different story. That's my biggest conspiracy of anything.
Seriously?
Well, they sent me a picture back when I was criticizing him one day, and it was him with tweeting with his pointer finger. And I was like, nobody does that. No one in their right mind does that. And it makes the most sense that, you know, typos and grammatical errors, things like that are intentional to make a rise out of people, distract people. And, you know, he doesn't mind being the clown. So I wouldn't be surprised about that. But with Cohen, yeah, he goes down. I'd say within 2 weeks, Trump would have to resign if Cohen were to flip.
Really?
too much stuff. Way too much
stuff. But I mean, like, what do you think? Okay, here's the thing. If we're, I mean, we'll get to the Ryan resignation in a minute, but he's not going to resign until after the midterms. So let's just say Cohen flips and Trump's aware of all this stuff. I mean, we're counting on McConnell and Ryan to do the right thing. And
please.
I don't think that they're going to. And I think that, I mean, I can't really gauge this, but, you know, I mean, it seems as if Trump feels he can do anything. I mean, he said himself he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and still get the support. So, I mean, let's just, do you think that he would resign, or do you think that he would wait, like, is the information going to be public and that's going to force him to resign? Or is he just going to say, screw this, I'm staying?
And a combination of all that. Yeah. Wow. He think about how many times he's resigned or quietly gone out of positions after he sucks it dry, makes it bankrupt. So now that he's bankrupted the country morally and financially, I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, I can do so much more on the outside. This is all a bunch of mess. And I want to do that. And
so that's how he would take. That's his take.
Yeah, because if you think about it immediately. Almost immediately, I may never talk about him ever again. Once he resigns, like maybe updates on him, but I immediately would move to Pence.
Right.
So
yes.
And so would everybody else for the most part. And so I don't think that he wants to. He definitely doesn't want to go down the impeachment route. He doesn't even want that to be started. So I'd say right now our best bet You know, also with Ryan, just FYI, from what I've heard is he might resign earlier, but this also is an opportunity for him to go out swinging. If he really thinks Trump is going to fail and he wants to save some face, he can do that without repercussions now and look like a hero.
Wow. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I'll throw him a parade. If he impeaches Trump, I will throw him a parade. I'll be in the front with a Paul Ryan t-shirt. Then I'll tear it up.
But what about McConnell and his turtle face?
Oh, I don't know. He's hopeless. He's nothing.
He's hopeless.
But I mean, what will he do? What are they going to do? I mean, if Cohen flips and we've got all this information, whether it's made public or not, and this is brought to McConnell, what does McConnell do? Does he just say, "Oh, all right, we have to do"? I mean, like, does he mumble and work toward impeachment? Or, I mean, I do see what you're saying. I can totally see Trump saying, you know, F this, I'm out. I can do more on the outside. I could see that happening. But there's also that side of him digging his heels in and barricading him inside the White House and said, I'm not leaving. So, I mean, this is a caged animal, in my opinion, whose reaction is not predictable at this point. There's a couple of different things that could happen. So you're saying that you believe resignation on Trump's part is the most probable scenario?
I'm guessing there'll be a package and it'll be like, here's what your life will be like if you keep on going forward. And the Republican Party would present him with, listen, we're going to move on impeachment if you don't resign. And then they might even try and pardon him. You know, I mean, that has to do with a lot. I mean, there's a lot of repercussions to getting a pardon and other things.
Right. Now, may I interject just quickly, because you mentioned you're going to move on to Pence immediately. Like I loved the way you phrased it. I'm almost done talking about him. Like, I'm almost never going to talk about him again. And I believe, because I think that they're going to present him with a package. And I think maybe it's Mueller who presents him with the package and says, look, we have all of this shit on you. We could put all of your rotten children in jail and your life will be hell. Walk away. And we're going to go easy on all of this scum that surrounds you. Whatever. Who cares if they pardon him? Like you said, his life will be miserable. But what would hurt him the most is, you know, he thinks maybe, all right, I'm going to walk away I'm going to resign. I'm going to do something great with my life on the outside because it's what I do best anyway. And then we never talk about him again. That would hurt him more, I think, than doing time, honestly. And so let's make a point and a pact here. Scott, you've got the reach. We're not going to talk about this mofo again. He goes away. We're done. We move on to Pence. And now to part, I don't know, five of this tirade I'm on. How dirty is Pence? Pence was Manafort's guy. Pence has been flying under the radar since day one. Is there dirt on Pence? And how do we get him out? Go, Scott.
Yeah, even, you know, Trump wanted to go home from Indiana after meeting with Pence or right around then. And Manafort literally lied to Trump and said, we have to stay for X, Y, and Z, and made him stay the night instead of flying back to New York. So he wanted Pence. And he also pushed out, I forget who was the top in the running. Maybe I can't remember who it was. But anyways, he made sure it was Pence.
Interesting.
And so Pence has done his own meetings with Russian religious leaders that are directly, you know, friends with Putin. And he's done that while he's in office. He also met with the former Greek defense minister, who was the connection between Papadopoulos and the Russian government, because he's friends with Putin. Pence knew, I think the biggest thing is on November 18th, of 2016, I filed a complaint with the Department of Justice, I think, and it was based on what was it? It was, I think he had talked about. So I sent a notice to Pence and the DOJ to have a paper trail so that we could say, hey, Flynn is getting paid by the Turkish people related to the Turkish and Russian governments, but everything is related to the Russian government. Here's him with Putin. Here's him, you know, doing X, Y, and Z. Here's how much he got paid. X, you know, and then the same day, Congressman Elijah Cummings also sent a notice directly to the DOJ, and I think he CC'd the FBI and leadership in the Republican Party. That was notarized directly to Pence. So whatever he says about this grandiose, oh well, Flynn lied to me. That's a lie. Mm-hmm. That's just an outright lie, and I think there will be so much scandal on whoever's next. Whoever's next is screwed. Like, I just straight up. I don't think whoever follows Trump, unless they're a Democrat, like if they follow him in his wake, it's going to take one scandal to bring him down. It's going to be very simple. Wow. I think we're going to have a moral reset. Like, but with Pence, he knew he's as much of it. And I don't think Donald will go out there without throwing Pence under the bus first, because that would delay his departure.
Of
and that's
course.
One of the only moves he has. And why wouldn't he? Because he's Donald Trump. That's what he does.
That's exactly right. Oh, well, my God.
And I see, you know,
I'm in heaven. I'm licking my chop. I'm like, this is beautiful.
Well,
you know, they always like to complain about, oh, well, why did you submit this complaint? Oh, why, you know, this means nothing, whatever. Okay, I've done like 100 of them on like 50 different staff members, all the family members. Some of them have led to people going to getting charged. So, I mean, I don't know what people are going to do with an health ethics complaint or DOJ complaint. All I know is that I wanted a paper trail, and now that's starting to pay off, and it makes me really look really smart, even though I didn't even know what a FARA was. I didn't know what a foreign agent, what that represented, you know. And I was like, well, what are we filing on Flynn? They're like, well, we need to file this because he is an unregistered foreign agent. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but okay. And so we filed it, you know, and then it turns out, you know, that's one of the flags that Mueller has to get him. But at the same time, you know, Mike Flynn Jr., and this is talking about the kids as leverage, Mike Flynn Jr. would be probably in jail already if Mike Flynn didn't make a deal, because he was the Pizzagate guy.
Yeah.
He was one of the would say, biggest pushers of fake news. And he also was in Russia, and I think he was paid for it. He was there with his dad. And funny enough, Louise Mensch sent me a video of she sent me different evidence, and I know she has different theories about stuff or whatever, but she has been helpful in sending some evidence over. And one of the was a video of Mike Flynn Jr. in the audience, and that implicated him to a level where I think it was beyond a fact that he was paid to be there just like his dad. And so he basically said, hey, you know, I would assume that the FBI said something along the lines of, I'm going to lock your son up if you don't give me everything right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take you to the prison. We're going to strip you of your military title and like a lot of shameful things. And with Flynn, I think he was facing pretty much the rest of his life in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, going back to Pence, I think that your statement about one scandal can bring him down is absolutely, I agree with that. And partly because I think as much as I despise Trump, he definitely has his charisma with, you know, his base loves him. He's so politically he's not politically correct. He's just this bull in a china shop. And I think that people on the right who have been watching Fox News and listening to Alex Jones are just cheering for him to troll the left. And it doesn't matter what he does or doesn't do as long as he trolls the left. Now, Pence is so boring and so dull and so old school, you know, GOP, I think in comparison, I think it would be easy just to take him down on the simple fact that compared to Trump, he has no energy. He's just blah, 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 you know, just incredibly boring.
Right.
It's funny because I always follow Chicks on the Right. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they did a hit piece on me back in 2012, and I used to be the spokesperson for Rock the Slut Vote. And so, of course, they picked on us. And I started blogging then, and they picked on me. So I always like to go to their page and follow what they say and what their followers say. I think their followers are kind of like the, you know, the new version of whatever the Tea Party is. So, I remember that they were all, you know, high on Pence because they're from Indiana, so is Pence. And but it's funny because I'm sure once, you know, when I guess Pence becomes the president, they're going to throw their support behind him. But after coming off of this like Trump train and the highs and the lows, I think Pence is going to be incredibly boring. And I follow what Louise Mensch says as well. She's, you know, obviously gotten some things right. If you followed her for the last year, there are some things that she's reported on that have come to fruition. I like to take all of that with a grain of salt, but you know, she seems to be under the impression that Pence is guilty too. So God, this is just going to be, as I like to say, exciting times. We're living in exciting times.
Right. It's going to get a little bit more chaotic, and yeah. And you know, the bad stuff, we're still got to face it coming up, because if you think about it, a lot of these moves that they make in the government, we're not going to see the outcome of those yet. Yeah. And those are going to be in effect no matter what as of right now. And as we see the changes be made and everything get stripped from after school programs to books and other things, and then them spend money, you know, $30 million on a military parade without tanks, you know, you're going to have a military parade, at least throw some tanks in the mix. But at the same time, our streets in DC are disgusting. They'll break in half and, you know, we don't need any more construction in this town. We need to rebuild the White House.
There's construction that we'd all sign on for. Yeah.
Exactly.
Reconstruction. Oh, wow. Scott, I don't know if you hung on Rachel Maddow's every word last night, like I know Kimberly and I did, but she drew a connection between the Dana Bente corroboration of James Comey's testimony earlier, or when was that? Was that last summer?
Yeah, Jesus. I think it was like last May or something.
I'm suddenly like 50 years older than I was
in
2016. But, you know, what does that mean for, you know, Trump calling Comey a straight up liar, a bad man? And then here comes Dana Bente, who was riding that Trump train from the get-go. I mean, he kept just, you know, popping back up on what appeared to be Trump's team. And yet he has handwritten notes that corroborate James Comey's account of his private meeting with Trump.
Like word for word.
Word for word. What does that mean to all of us?
that's a good question. I think it's just another piece of evidence. And you know, they may look at him as maybe a person that would have spoke out for Trump, and they're quelling that immediately. That may be one of the things that they're doing, is they're setting him up so that he cannot come out and be a pro-Trump's kind of spokesman and whatnot. So I could see him being set up like that. Right now, it looks like they're covering their bases, silencing different people legally by charging them or, you know, raiding their offices. You know, and I think the smartest thing for people to do is to shut up and let people do their jobs, because at the end of the day, I think it's very clear that these people are terrible. They are awful people. These are bad people. You know, if you can even think of, there's multiple people from the Trump campaign that have been reportedly have ordered murders before. OK, as in hits, like in that Manafort specifically.
Oh, my God.
Oh, his daughters, there were texts that leaked out a year and some odd time ago that said that their money was all blood money. And, you know, he also had a major role. Him and Stone had a potential major role. They're looking into it now in the annexation of Crimea. So they had a role where they ran a distraction or something that allowed the Russian military to come in. There's a lot of different things popping up, but these are evil people. And the people that he's had the money with, I mean, they run drugs, they do sex trafficking, underage, you know, women and or girls and boys, across the world. So these are evil people.
Yeah.
I would say Trump is the biggest mobster in the world.
Well,
Putin
too.
Oh yeah.
Putin, I think Putin is a pretty big mobster. I think
mark that.
Trump's got his training wheels on. He needs to start hurting more of his enemies first before, you know, he needs to start arresting me and you guys and everybody else.
Exactly. Well, you know, a little side note, I lived in Moscow in 1980-81, so that was when communism was going strong. My father worked for ABC News. And so I feel that even though, I mean, at the time I was 12, I was in seventh grade, and I went to Anglo-American school. I didn't go to a Russian school. But I had the opportunity to see firsthand what it's like to, you know, I don't think Putin would try to turn us into a communist country. But I do understand how or what it feels like to be in a very large city anyway, because mostly I didn't really travel outside of Moscow. And I saw what it was like. I saw the tone and the bleakness. I mean, granted, it is Russia, so it's like, you know, I lived there literally for like one school year. I moved there right before a couple days before school started in September, and then in June, just a few days after school ended, I came home. So I was there for the winter, and it's bleak and gray, and so obviously there is a tone set by the climate and everything. But aside from that, the people were so beaten down. They were just so beaten down. And I know how easy it is to, you know, just take the control away and make people feel afraid that if they speak out, their families will be killed or whatever it is, whatever threat is held over them. So, you know, I mean, I truly believe, and I want to ask you about Michael Avenatti in a second, but I truly believe that, you know, we have a single opportunity here and we're not going to get it again. We have to get this right. We have to get the Trump thing right. We have to win the midterms. We have to win 2020. And 2020 is a whole other story, which I'll talk about later. But I mean, you know, maybe another podcast or something. Let's like just focus on the midterms, but we have to get our crap together now. We have to put in place rules to keep this from ever happening again. And it's like exciting and it's fun and everything to follow the news and you know, fingers crossed, Trump goes down, resigns, whatever it is, and then we get Pence. But it's like this is so frightening because Putin is not done. You know, he's got his claws into our democracy. And when these fellows are gone, they're still going to be residual. They're still going to be attacking us. So the people who are in charge, both, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans who are recognizing what's happening, need to work together. Anyway, that's how I feel, because it's just very frightening. You know, I mean, I experienced a communist environment and I was very fortunate to be at least 12 years old so I could understand what I was seeing. And I was fortunate enough to go to a good school where, you know, my political science teacher kept us talking about it all the time and we understood what was happening. And so I wish more people were paying attention to this Russia thing, but I think that's finally starting to happen now that all this is going down. So bringing this into Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels lawyer, who I love because he plays Trump's game better than Trump, and he is poking Trump with a sharp stick. And so I wanted to ask you your opinion on him as far as, do you think that there's a connection to the Russia probe with this, or, you know, how, even if there's no specific connection to Russia, how will it impact the Mueller probe as far as, like, will it just add extra pressure or whatever? Like, what do you think of the Avenatti thing as far as Trump is concerned?
I think the setup of how they set up the companies, what they registered with, I think they follow that template to backtrack to see what else they've set up, other payoffs. And I think that's how it relates to the Russia probe in the greatest way, is by making it clear that, you know, there is a template in regards to how they pay off people. And the way it could lead back is shell companies that Cohen set up where they're making money off of Russian oil deals or kickbacks from somewhere, or, you know, laundering money for people through their properties. So there's a lot of different ways, but it really shows that map. It's like a road map, I think, more so than anything else, of just, you know, here's who he usually registers with. You know, here's who you should subpoena in regards to his registration agency or whatever, so that you can find out who else, you know, and then what pseudonyms he's filed them under, because Michael Cohen goes by Michael Dean Cohen, Mikhail Cohen, Michael Mikhail. Michael Hacking. Hacking is one of it, but that's taxi related as hacking. But he does have an official legal name of Michael D. Hacking.
Interesting. Wow.
I mean, it doesn't get filthier, honestly.
I will tell you this. This is the first time I'm ever talking about it. I've been threatened hundreds of times. I've had to go into hiding. I've had to, I've had to prep my family. I've had to have them briefed by a security team. On how to interact with other people who might, you know, threaten them. There have been folks who've been detained, arrested. There's a couple that probably will end up in prison because of it. And there's, you know, there's been different hacks, attempts to hack, you know, my Uber, where they thought that they were trying to figure out location and things like that. So I had to be super careful, especially in 2017, towards the beginning of it, when they set out the Russian embassy in the UK sent out a tweet basically targeting me, saying, keep calling Trump thanks for calling Trump the Putin's puppet or whatever. And when they did that, then the harassment came up to a new level. And that was right before Sally Yates and Comey were about to testify. And that's what we were pushing for publicly, mm-hmm. on top of revealing video and photos of all their connections in Russia, and then story after story churning out from different media agencies from the evidence that we pumped out. So it was pretty dangerous. And I think, you know, it's a lot of people, some of them were serious, most of them were not. But still, to have that kind of attitude where you think that you can threaten someone that you don't know with their life, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to come, I'm going to shoot up your front porch and things like that.
Wow.
You know, eventually it wears down where you just hire a security team and have to fund that, you know, and then they attack you in every way possible, and you just have to power through it. And I think that's what's great, is we're at the point now of no return for the fall. We are very organized. I think one of the things that surprised me the other day is a Republican friend said, wait, the resistance is mostly Democrats? And I was like, yeah, dude. Like, and they're like, oh, shit. So 99.9% of it, man. Like, and then he's just like, oh, no. Like, and he just kind of, I'm like, what do you think we were doing?
In
other places, like starting in Georgia, Virginia, New Jersey, Alabama, like, come on, man. Like, this is what we're focused on, is being organized. So merging that all together instead of having a defined task of, like, you know, having a Dem wave and vote Dem and different hashtags that are very simple, that make it clear that we're about Democrats. And yeah. I know it kind of stinks to say, oh, well, we're going to have to skew to that. Well, that's the deal. We mm-hmm. have to vote for Democrats. You have to vote for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Do it now. We need a shift of power. And there's no other party that's going to do that. So we got to make sure that you're right. We got to be organized, and we've got to. But I can tell you this, we're more organized than ever. Our organization, Democratic Coalition, has 50 different state chairs. We have chairs in each congressional district throughout the country. And what that is a rapid response. So I'll get messages of things happening locally, and then we'll make that national. And so there's going to be a very coordinated effort so that we can all communicate with each other. So when Republicans abuse their power, we immediately go after it to then, you know, stop it from happening throughout the country. Like we do, you know, when we file complaints against somebody, like, you know, if they threatened Hillary in September 2016, one guy even threatened to hang her on the Washington Mall. And so, and he was a United pilot. That was one of the first signs of resistance. I think that was in July of 2016. And I was like, what can we do about this? So we filed a complaint. It was like an online form with Secret Service, and then did it locally in West Virginia, and then sent like an email, and then wrote United directly, and then United suspended him. And I was like, wait a second. Wow. We may have something here.
Right. Right.
And so it was just like, and that deterred some others from doing it. Cause you know, if they spoke out a little too much, we'd be like, wait a second, don't you dare threaten her. And nobody else was doing anything about it. Cause we had not encountered that before at right. that level where it was of that level of disgust.
And so blatant, Scott, you know, I mean, it's like, these are death threats essentially.
Yeah, and, you know, Senator Byrd did the same thing leading up to the election, and he had to bow out of a couple different fundraisers because he said, well, I wish the target was on her back, something along those lines.
Yep.
And I was just like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, and I literally said that to him, and it just, you know, of course he ignores me, but I said, well, if you guys keep this up, and I'm going to run in 2020 against Tillis. I mean, you know, these people are ridiculous, and they're thinking – you know, when they get away with stuff, remember, like the accountability factor is huge, and we need to hold these people accountable. I don't care if this was Clinton, I would be doing the same thing.
Me
probably
too.
Probably yes. more. I'd be outraged. I would no way. And
right.
so the fact that it's another party, thank God. Yeah. But this is and also I don't celebrate any of this.
Yeah,
this is
neither.
Disgusting. I'm very excited that justice is going to be served.
Yes, right, of course.
But still, I don't trust any of it. And we should never, I don't think I'll ever be able to reset again and feel safe in this country with our political leaders ever again. And that is a good thing. That is a good thing.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to always doubt them. I'm going to question everything they do. And I always have. And that's why I've been allowed in the room, because I don't mind asking those questions, but everybody's got to do that. Yeah. And this energy is beyond anything I saw in 2006. I was in Florida, 2008, anything relating to Obama. And that was gigantic. Yeah. You know,
right.
This is kids who grew up that wish it were Obama running right now, that have learned how to speak out for themselves, and people are actually listening. So this is probably the good news here is, I mean, gerrymandering, it's cool to fight against it now. You know, voting
right.
is cool.
Right.
If you don't vote, then you're the person out. Let
yeah,
this
right.
left out. So it's really the positive thing here is that we have the opportunity to make this a progressive America where everybody has health insurance, where there's equal pay and wages, you know, and the rich don't control anything anymore. You know, we mm-hmm. can strip money away from politics. Like, there's so much stuff we can do because, you know, when they say, I'm going to take all your health care, that opens the door for us saying, well, you know, we're going to give health care to everybody. And
yeah.
it's like, well, how do you do that? I'm like, I don't care. Like, you know, and that's, well, Democrats don't stand for anything. God, shut up.
Bullshit.
Yeah, right, exactly. They're both parties are the same BS.
Scott, you said that the energy is, like, to me, it's palpable. And just talking to you and actually interacting with you personally has been such a joy because, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, you know, you stand for something. I hang on your every word. You have, like, unleashed the Kraken that is in the regular people. I mean it. You're one of the, like, leaders of this resistance party because, like you said, oh, we just wrote to United and they suspended this mother effer who said he wanted to hang Hillary Clinton. Let's see what else we can do.
Yeah.
Now, on that, you know, just in that vein, you know, here I am sitting in Oakland, California, and I'm very politically active. I've voted ever since I could vote. I'm involved in local politics. I see what can happen when you latch on to the Andrew Jans campaign, which is, you know, in a completely different district from where I am. But it makes me excited thinking, wow, grassroots is real. Private money can actually propel someone forward and actually, you know, get people elected where the opponent has all this corporate money.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about regular people running for these local positions, and how important is that to making a progressive America a reality?
Well, numbers always helps. I mean, if you see, this is a trend that we always see when there's a shift of power. You know, you see a lot of resignations from the other party. That will then lead to them campaigning for less people. Like, I don't know how much Ryan will actually. I think this might be the only way that they have a chance to save the House, because Paul Ryan can now campaign. He can campaign for other people.
Right.
And that's the only positive there. But at the same time, the energy to see him is not going to be the same. So people aren't going to be like, oh, well, let me go see this future lobbyist. He's 48 years old. He is not retiring. He is resigning in disgrace. He knows he's going to lose the House. He doesn't want to work for it. He says, I regret nothing. Okay, well, then you're an idiot. Because it doesn't make any sense. But I've been doing this for 2 years now. I don't know why. I had this inkling of like, well, I don't know where these Bernie and Obama and all these other folks are going to go. And I was just like, well, let's just get together on the grand scheme of things. And that's, you know, we started a group and we were like, let's do it as a super PAC, because you know, if we really cause enough trouble, they'll want to get rid of super PACs. it was like, you gotta take advantage of the situation here. So you know, we use that to do opposition research and also fight foreign influence campaigns that I didn't even know. I will tell you this: when they would do hashtag campaigns in Russia, and I'd see it. Support for Trump come up in these hashtags, I'd be like, what is this? So I would, you know, fight back with a counter hashtag and be like, you know, blah blah blah, retweet if you agree. That's all to get it, you know, trending. And it seems to work. Now it's scary. Now we can get something trending worldwide in like 15 minutes. They are clearly outnumbered. They are clearly outmatched. This is a progressive America for the most part. Most of the people don't know they are progressive. But, you know, I think there'll be a shift in regards to what the Republican Party stands for. I think a lot of their social values will change. And they don't have a choice, or they're going to be replaced by a different party of sorts. But I think people like Kasich and, you know, Romney and other folks are going to take over the party.
And we'll be in a better spot.
But right now, it just was announced that Comey will be giving an interview. Oh boy! Soon. I don't. I didn't.
You know, I saw Comey. I think Comey's going to be, if I'm not mistaken, on ABC on Sunday night, or it's a BBC interview at 10 o'clock. I think it's airing on ABC. I'm not sure, but I know he's going on this media tour for his new book.
This is a nightmare for Trump, because once these people start talking out, the viability is clear. You can't really attack it, and also they're just brilliant with the messaging. This is a disaster for Trump. That's worse than the Stormy Daniels interview in my mind.
Oh my God. Well, this conversation has definitely gotten me all excited. So I'm so glad that you are here today to talk to us, and hopefully you're going to be able to come back and talk. Maybe, you know, maybe the Pence presidency will happen sooner than we expect. But I wanted to thank you, Scott, for coming on today. And before you go, tell everybody where they can find you. Plug yourself. Just go crazy.
Yeah, I'm terrible at that. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. So we are doing, you can find me on SoundCloud, look for Dworkin Report. That's where our two podcasts that we're launching next week. One podcast will be me interviewing stars that resist. So Michael Rappaport, Alyssa Milano, Rosie O'Donnell, Alec Baldwin, people like that. And then the other track will be our investigations into individuals. So each episode, it's sort of like Serial, probably not as good as Serial, but it will be along those lines where we do deep dives, 45 minutes to an hour, to represent all the evidence that we found on everybody, because people aren't aware of a lot of things, you know, if it's just tweeted out. So we're going to then pair that with individual dossiers. Anyways, you can follow me on Twitter at Funder, and you can check out our website at democraticcoalition.org.
Wow, your podcast sounds amazing. I can't wait to hear it. Yeah,
it's that's fun. Be it's so fun because I got so many journalists and different people that are experts chiming in. Like on the first episode, we have like 15 different journalists that are, you know, giving their expertise in regards to Cohen. Second episode would be Don Jr. But we're doing these deep dives, and with it, we'll go press kit so that people, the press gets a, and then they have the podcast and then also a dossier and the individual person that stays live so that we have a timeline on every connection they have and what their role is and any scandal that's popped up. So it's all in one place, because that's the biggest problem is people forget stories. So yeah, let's remind them of everything all in one place.
Awesome. Right.
God, cool. Scott. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing and for lighting a fire under all of us and showing us how we can actually make a difference. And I hope that doesn't sound lame. It's truly sincere. It's remarkable what you've done in this short period of time to change the course of how we're going to live in this country. And I thank you.
Yes. I will say that it's an honor to serve my country and the capacity that I can, you know, having white privilege and all this other, it kind of just remind myself every single day, like, what can I do to help people today? There's really nothing in it for me. And you'll see in the profiles coming out in different papers in the next few weeks on me. Like, I bought my car from eBay for $2,000 after I had 200,000 miles. I'm not an elitist kind of guy that they're going to try and paint me as like another Trump or something. I'm very frugal. I live a simple life. But, you know, I have this fire inside of me that just wants to fight back, you know, because I know that other people don't have the voice or the opportunity. So if I can give other people that voice or also, you know, try and speak back and people will listen, I'll keep on talking while people listen. And I just want to do what's best for this country. I really didn't want to be out in front. I really didn't want to, you know, make a big scene, but I'm going to, and it's going to get louder and it's going to be angrier, but at the same time, it's going to be driven towards positivity for November. So we've got this.
I'm glad Bob clapped, because I was going to hoot, holler, and
scream. All right, Scott, well, thank you so much. And we'll have to have you back on. Hopefully you can come on when Pence is the prez.
Anytime, unless the bus is thrown, but you know, I'm guessing Pence is next. Yeah, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Follow him at Funder. All right. Wow. That was really interesting, wasn't it?
It was amazing.
And we're making all these noises when he's talking. We're like,
I'm sorry. I can't.
No, we both were doing it. It's like,
this is the best I have felt in my heart and soul since the fucking election.
Well, let me just be a little bit of Debbie Downer for a minute. And I mean, I think that it's an overall good thing. But I mean, I swear, I am so scared of Trump's reaction now. You know, I mean, it's like, what is he going to do? What is he going to try to do? I think that, you know, because we've been on this train wreck for so long, I think the train is going to crash. And then when it crashes, it's going to hurt. You know, eventually we're going to get out of that. But
here's what I think. I totally hear you on that, because that's always like looming.
Yeah.
You know, here I am clapping like the monkey with the cymbals, you know. But at the same, which, by the way, do you notice Lawrence O'Donnell wanting to do that? Like when he has Michael Avenatti on the show, he's grinning so hard, he's almost bouncing in his seat.
Yes.
And I imagine him like, if only he had a set of cymbals in his hands. So I'm here, monkey with the cymbals. But yes, there's something, and it's almost like we don't know what it is when that train crashes. But here's what I think, Kimberly, because, okay, Comey's story was corroborated in writing by Dana Bente. Okay. Michael Cohen's office, home, and hotel room were raided by the FBI.
Yeah.
Okay.
Home, office, and hotel.
Home, office, and hotel. All right. That's bad.
That's so bad. I know. No, I'm making those noises. I know. It's like, that is so bad.
So here's what I think, and what the hell do I know? Other than, you know, listening to people like Scott, listening to Jonathan LeCaire on Terry Gross last year, talking about, listen, this is what's going to happen. Trump, as evil and heinous as he is, he has children by three different women, you know, and their lives are in danger. I mean, these people are all in danger of going to prison. Mm-hmm. And so is he now. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think they're going to make a deal, and I don't think there's anything he can do. I really don't honestly totally understand the whole Syria thing and how that could go sideways and what that means. And, you know, I'm sure that it's bad. And he's out there saying, I'm going to do this, where he's playing his hand and telling the enemy what his next move is going to be militarily. Okay. But what's really at stake here is their livelihood and where they're going to be spending their next nights. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because he's obstruction, collusion, money laundering, banging a porn star, lying about it, having her life threatened. I mean, the list goes on and on. Murder. Matt, let's not forget Manafort had that pre-dawn raid.
Yeah.
However many months ago that was. I mean, that was at Halloween.
Yeah, that was October, right.
And so, you know, there's a lot that we don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to take a deal, and I think he's going to step down and think, you know, that he's going to move on and have a great life on the outside.
Yeah,
you know,
well, the thing that makes me wonder is, like, for instance, you know, obviously Mueller with raiding Cohen is more than likely, if he didn't already, has his tax returns. And God only knows what else he has, but you know, you've got of course it's very difficult to prove collusion, and I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. It's all going to, you know, we don't know what they have. Maybe it's very easy for them to prove collusion because they have the obvious proof right in front of them. Or I don't know how that's all going to work out, but let's say, you know, like, this is a bit of a concern of mine. So if he gets a deal, does that mean that he gets off for everything that he's ever done over, you know, I don't know, however many years or whatever they find when it comes to Russian money? Like, if they say to him, all right, we're not going to impeach you, or we're going to move to impeachment unless you resign. And then, excuse me, Mueller says, okay, well, we've got A, B, and C. So we will let you go on A, B, and C. Does he have to convince Trump that, what about D? What if they have a D on him? Can they, you know, can they go after him as a private citizen?
Well, I would imagine that New York can, right?
Yeah, New York can. Absolutely. I mean, because I just, as much as, you know, I mean, Scott, I agree with Scott that let's just get him out and, you know, and then we'll just deal with what we have to deal with. But the idea of him walking free after living a life of screwing people and laundering money and just all these nefarious deals. I mean, I feel like we need to have some kind of justice. I mean, I don't know if that means him going to jail, but I'd like to at least see some kind of, you know, charges brought up against him when he's just a regular person like the rest of us and he's no longer a president. Because, you know, it really pisses me off that when he dies, he's going to get that presidential fucking funeral, and that there's going to be a picture of him hanging in the White House, that, you know what I mean? All that stuff, it just makes me so angry because
annul it. You know, maybe they'll put it like in a freaking hallway. Maybe they'll put it in that stairwell
put him in the stairs. The only picture hanging in the stairwell.
What was Kevin Spacey's name? Yeah, you know, that corrupt motherfucker.
Right.
He is going to be the zit. He's going to be the herpes sore on the lip of the presidency.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, this is, no. He won't be celebrated. He's the worst thing to ever happen to American politics ever.
Well, he
won't
be pardoned.
The end.
Like, what? This is what I would like. I would like, it would be so awesome if Mueller was like, all right, we've got, you know, A, B, C, and D. So that's obstruction of justice, collusion, and then let's just throw something else
Russian
in. And then,
money laundering, tax evasion.
Well, let's just, okay, then we'll say tax evasion, right? We'll leave it at those three. So then Trump says, all right, I'm going to skate and I'm going to retire. So then now he's like a free man. And then does Mueller continue to go after him for Russian money laundering? And if so, if we have a it's going to be a while till we have a Democratic president, but they can't pardon him. But it's like Scott was saying, that kind of worries me. It's like, what if he is what if Mueller goes after him for Russian money laundering and then they find him guilty and then Pence or whatever idiot pardons him? I mean,
but what about this? So Mueller handed this off to the local authorities. Right. This was New York that had the FBI raid.
But it's still this, federal.
That's fine. But here's what I think. I don't care if they get him on any federal crimes after he resigns and is pardoned, as long as New York can get him on some big money laundering.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. You know, that's it.
I want to see that. I want to see him perp walked somewhere. I want him out. I want him out and away from anything that has to do with federal politics first. Right. Then I drew a little flow chart while we were talking to Scott, and I wrote, because I wrote down Pence plus Russia equals question mark. And then Scott answered the question. Well, Pence had, you know, we've seen the pictures of Pence with the Russian religious leaders who are tied to Putin and the Kremlin. And then he said, so we've got that, you know, that's plain as day. You could Google that right now. But then he said, Pence has these ties to these Greek religious figures who then put him in touch with Papadopoulos, who the Greek religious figures are tied to the Russian religious figures, which are tied to Putin. And so I've got all these little arrows and stuff. Yeah. And so let's just one thing at a time. Right. I've never felt so non-manic in a negative way about this as I do right now. Like I'm, you know, Scott Dworkin is a man, like if there was like a political equivalent to sainthood, you know what I'm saying? I wondered, like, I wanted to ask him, how does he make a living? And he's doing this on our behalf and he's not asking for money. He's just, he is doing like, the political equivalent.
Well, I do think the Democratic coalition collects money. I think that people can donate to that, and I think they do.
I'm doing that right now.
you're so funny. I started really paying attention to him right when Trump became president. So, you know, I think that's kind of like, it's just going along with the idea of, you know, we all kind of came together. You know, a whole bunch of us on Twitter, marching in the streets. You know what's just so awesome too, before we go, is we had the Women's March right after the inauguration. And then all of a sudden it was just like, you know, they wanted to take away our health care. So people started showing up and it's great because Rachel Maddow always focuses on this. She focuses on all of the people who are showing up to the offices of congressional representatives and, you know, resisting and protesting. So we had a march for truth. We had a march for science. We had the gun control march, which happened because of kids in a very short period of time. We've had two women's marches. And I think that, you know, I'm always going to say we're not going to have a Democratic blue wave or blue tsunami unless everybody votes. We have to vote. But I think the current political climate has, you know, and I will say that both, you know, Hillary and Bernie helped to wake that up. Hillary not winning there's a reason. I can't talk right now. I'm like so excited. I'm like, my tongue is going to fall.
I know.
Because she lost, a lot of women have decided to throw their heads to say, I'm going to run. And those women are winning. And Bernie Sanders, regardless of my opinion of him right now, which is not good, was able to inspire a lot of young people to become involved with the political system and to run for office and to vote and to organize. And so, you know, unfortunately Trump's win, I should say, and I say that in air quotes because Putin installed him, but Trump's win was definitely like a catalyst in our country to wake people up. I hope that we're smart with it because we're fortunate right now that we have Trump and not smart Trump. You know what I mean? It's like, what if it were Putin? What if we had the equivalent of Putin? You know, Putin is smart and he's savvy, and he and Trump is just like I said, he's a bull in the china shop. He just goes and knocks everything over. He understands the reality television kind of mentality and how to get ratings. And, you know, Bob has said to me that, and he said on his show that if Trump were to just keep his mouth shut and stay under the radar, he'd probably be really popular. You know, and the scary thing is that the next time this happens, we could get smart Trump. So, I mean, God, we really have to be vigilant. Did I say it right?
Vigilant.
Vigilant.
See, I do it all the time. Freaking A. Why do I say village? I think I'm getting it right and then I get it wrong. And I'm an author. Hello. but anyway, vigilant. We have to remain vigilant and we have to stay, you know, motivated and politically engaged because, oh my God. All right.
You
well,
know what? Huh. I gotta say, I'm just getting warmed up. Like, it took other people having balls. It took people like, you know, Scott Dwork. You know, I am all about, like, I want to make change in this world. I'm involved now where I wasn't, you know, I voted always. I always read up and tried to educate myself as best I could on candidates and issues and things, but I am involved in politics at the local level. I am involved outside of my district, as you know. I am involved. I read, I want to stay informed. And I believe that we are on the precipice of something really, really huge, which is a progressive movement in this country that is going to allow everybody to have healthcare, access to healthcare, that where pay equity is just something that is, where color is embraced and where gender does not play into a decision. You know what I'm saying?
I think
a lot of damage has been done, and people talk about, yes, it's going to take another generation for us to repair the damage that these Trump motherfuckers have inflicted upon our society. But we're going to change it. The good is stronger than evil. There is more good than there is evil and hate. And, you know, let's get angry, but let's move towards the positive.
And
we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
All right. So we're going to move in. We're getting ready to move in to end another thing. So that's one where you gotta support the show for $5 a month.
That's
nothing. Come on. $5 a month. And we're going to be talking about that. Molly Ringwald wrote an article about sexism and her experiences in all the John Hughes movies, and Tony Robbins, and I want to talk a little tiny bit about Equal Pay Day. So anyway, we're going to see you on the other side, and another thing. Hold on.